Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Welcome back. Stay in touch now on the band. So 0870 32 32 32. That is the WhatsApp. Kieran Cuddihy is here. What's happening on Liveline today, Kieran?
Well, I have to acknowledge that the very first job I had to do in RTÉ yesterday was to talk to you about what was going on in Liveline, and I got in trouble because I didn't tell anyone how to get in touch with the show, which is admittedly
a pretty
central element of the whole Liveline thing, isn't it? Anyway, I'll get to those numbers in a minute. Lots of people did get in touch despite my shortcomings in telling them how to do so, about you know, kids and families experiencing life on the list, as we described it yesterday. So we're going to come back to that, you know, shortcomings with regard to services for children with additional needs. A woman's after getting in touch with us as well, wondering if it was a step too far when her delivery driver got in touch with her by text that he got off one of the delivery dockets to ask her out. So she is married. He is married, apparently. But, you know, the heart wants what it wants.
GDPR is not really for romance.
Yes, it washes up on the cliffs of love, I guess. And we are going to be talking as well about getting lost in the back roads as a result of Google Maps. You know, you just put it in, you follow the directions. I remember going to a wedding in Wicklow and it was like, you were 300 metres of your destination and we were somewhere between kind of the Sally Gap and Lugnaquilla or somewhere. Yeah, we were nowhere near
really
the destination.
Really bad at finding churches, I noticed, Google Maps. If you look, but everything's called St. Mary's or St. Joseph's and it can't find.
Anyway, the phone numbers. 51551 for your text, 0818 715 815.
Oh, you'll be saying it in your sleep. Kieran Cuddihy, thank you so much. And as Kieran makes his way out there, we have the veteran of current affairs, Brian Dobson. Welcome back.
It's great to be the presence of the next generation, Oliver. Fantastic. It's lovely to be here.
That's Kieran you're talking about, not me. Brian, welcome. I believe you love a musical. We were just chatting about My Fair Lady.
I do, yeah. Well, we got into them. My daughter, Sophie, was in UCD and got involved in musical society. So Crea, my wife, and I used to go along to these shows and we really enjoyed them. So occasionally now, if we're in London or New York or somewhere, we try and take in a show. I love a great musical. I saw Hamilton in New York earlier this year. It was fantastic. Fantastic.
Oh, so you had kind of, because the last time we met you, we had you rapping. So it's obviously all goes back to your Hamilton.
No.
And would you stick on an Our Musical at Christmas?
I love movies and musicals at 18 Gormley Presents on Lyric on a Saturday afternoon. Yeah. That's really an appointment to listen for me.
Most people I know listen to that show on the Saturday. That is very much appointment. I presume you can sing then.
No.
You have the baritone voice.
Not a note in my head. No. I croak.
You're shy around this area, I expect. Come here to me. We know it's about a year and a half, is it, since you retired?
It is May of last year, so more than a year and a half.
May of last year?
That's right, yeah.
It feels like you've been here like every other day. How
forgotten
many,
but not gone.
It is inauguration day. The telly pictures have begun already. You've seen a lot of these, I'd imagine, in your time as a reporter and presenter and around the fringes.
I go back to Mary Robinson in 1990.
As 35 years
young RTÉ reporter at the time. I remember being in the RDS when she made that famous speech about the hand that rocked the cradle, rocked the system, when she accepted her victory. And I was just a reporter on the day, and then subsequently I presented or was involved in some of the coverage of the inaugurations and, of course, election campaigns over the years as well.
You were the commentator for Mary McAleese's once?
I was, yes, for Mary McAleese's and for Michael D. Higgins's first inauguration in 2011, which, just like today, was a day on which it absolutely poured rain. Everywhere was umbrellas. I'm looking at some of the pictures of Dublin Castle and the rain does seem to have held off just for the moment. So fingers crossed it stays dry.
Those cobblestones in the rain.
Well, you see, if you're going to hold something in Ireland in November, what do you expect? And in fact, the inauguration has been held on this date, on the 11th of November, since Mary McAleese's first inauguration in 1997. So it's always coincided with Armistice Day, the marking the end of the First World War.
Yes.
And in fact, both Michael D. and Mary Robinson, or Mary McAleese, referred to that in their speeches. I'll be interested to see today, is there any reference to it?
That will be interesting. One of the things to look out for, we didn't know about, because this is the 11th day of the 11th month armistice, going way back.
Guns fell silent.
The end of the Great War. You have a connection, actually. I'll come back to that because I want to talk about the inauguration a little bit more. Because right now, the state, we have no president. Is that correct?
We have a presidential commission which is holding the presidential responsibilities. And that's just a small group. I think it's the Ciarán Cóirle of the Dáil, the Cathaoirleach of the Shannon, I think the Chief Justice as well. So from midnight last night until 12:30 this afternoon, it's the presidential commission look after any duties that may fall to the president to be performed. And then from 12:30, from taking the oath, Catherine Connolly will become our 10th president.
Oh, it's the oath. The minute the oath is
the
complete.
Minute the oath, yes, and then the Chief Justice who will administer the oath will then present her with the presidential seal, and that's the moment in which he takes office.
It's always been the Chief Justice's job.
It has, yes, yes. The Chief Justice swears in the incoming president, the president-elect, and the president has always recited the oath in Irish.
Of course.
Even some of those who didn't
official
necessarily
language.
Great Irish.
Oh,
Catherine
yeah.
Connolly, of course, is highly fluent, so she'll recite the oath in Irish. And that's really the centrepiece of the ceremony this afternoon. Now, we don't in Ireland do a lot of state ceremony, unlike
no.
our friends in the UK, where every year they
mad
seem
for
to
us, aren't they? Black rods
and
people rolling orbs.
We do have this particular moment. It doesn't come that often, every 7 years typically, unless something happens in the interim for a president resigns or dies in office. So every 7 years we have this opportunity as a state to come together. And at the centrepiece of this, witnessed by members of the Oireachtas, by the senior members of judges, by the diplomatic corps, attended by the defence forces, our first citizen takes the oath of office. And in English, it reads, and it's in the Constitution, in the presence of Almighty God, I do solemnly and sincerely promise and declare that I will maintain the Constitution of Ireland and uphold its laws, that I will fulfil my duties faithfully and conscientiously in accordance with the Constitution and the law, and that I will dedicate my abilities to the service and welfare of the people of Ireland. May God direct and sustain me.
There's
and that's what we'll hear in Irish from Catherine Connolly.
There's a lot of God in there, isn't
there's
there?
A good bit of God. He's at the beginning and he's there at the
at
end.
The end.
But
yeah.
her promise is to use her abilities to the service and welfare of the people of Ireland. And of course, I suppose uniquely among our political leaders, she's the one who has the biggest mandate. I mean, nearly in
nobody
Catherine Connolly's case,
that, yeah.
a million votes. And you know,
it's a record, isn't it?
It's the biggest plurality of votes. That Michael Dee, I think, was a little bit around 800,000 for his second election. So it's a tremendous, I suppose, expression of the soft power of the presidency. There's a lot of discussion about the powers of the president. They are in law very, very limited, and we've been ventilating that over the last few weeks. But there's a tremendous soft power, an ability to represent us and to speak on our behalf.
Just talking about the God bit, because I was watching a Pathé News clip of Sean T. O'Callaghan being sworn in. The inaugurations used to involve a huge mass.
Did they? Okay. Well,
in the pro-cathedral. And speaking of pomp, there were kind of priests carrying the long trains, like Princess Diana's wedding in the 80s.
Well, we've had two Protestant, two Church of Ireland presidents.
And those services were in St. Patrick's.
Those were in St. Patrick's Cathedral, I think. But I think that's no longer the case. But there will be, so the ceremony will begin at 12 o'clock, begin at midday, and there'll be music and readings and prayers. It's a multi-faith ceremony.
Yes.
And then at 12:30, the oath will be administered. There'll be a 21-gun salute from Collins Barracks. We just saw the president-elect driving past there a few moments ago. And I think, in fact, I see
stepping out of their car.
The motorcade now just arriving in the upper yard in Dublin Castle. The president-elect, accompanied by her husband, Brian, also her sons, Brian and Stephen, will be there as well. The president-elect has, I think, 25 invitations to issue. So they're all, I understand, members of her family who will be attending. So her political supporters will have an opportunity later in the day to gather at Dublin Castle. So here she comes. She's greeted now at the entrance to the State Apartments at Dublin Castle by Tánaiste and by the Minister for Foreign Affairs. So Simon Harris and Pascal Donoghue there greeting the President. She is wearing an outfit that's been designed by Louise Kennedy.
This is something you've discovered.
Well, I just made a few calls and I'm afraid I don't know the technical term, but it's purple. I can see that.
It is, yeah.
And it's a full-length coat and trousers underneath. And that's interesting because Mary Robinson, for her inauguration, wore purple.
She did.
And at the time...
Also Louise Kennedy.
Also
outfit,
Louise Kennedy.
And it's now in the Collins Barracks where
exactly,
the gun salute
part of
happened.
An exhibition, yeah. So, and I think purple is connected with the suffragettes, the movement for votes
is
for women
the
in the early
idea?
Part of the last
that's
century. So I think that was a symbolism of the time that Mary Robinson was seeking to convey. The presidency is very much about symbols. And Mary Robinson, actually, in her inauguration speech, spoke about the importance and the power of symbols that can be deployed by the president to give meaning and purpose to their presidency. So the president-elect now and her husband Brian, they've entered the State Apartments. They'll go up that battle-axe staircase. Isn't that a wonderful word?
The
battle-axe staircase onto the battle-axe landing. Because apparently back in the day they used to stand outside the soldiers with their battle-axes to protect the viceroy. This, of course, Dublin Castle, the seat for hundreds of years of British rule in Ireland.
Yeah.
St. Patrick's Hall, a venue that's really steeped in the history, that aspect of her history. If the president-elect looks up, she'll see a painting on the ceiling of the coronation of George III. It has that sort of...
That's wonderful symbolism that history there, isn't it? It's kind of reinforcing this independence for most of the country on this kind of particular day. And St. Patrick's, and the flags along either side, they're from the 18th century.
They are the flags of the Order of St. Patrick, which was an order of chivalry that was founded in the 18th century and then went into abeyance, obviously, after independence. But the flags are still there. So all those echoes, if you like, of our history and our past on this momentous day where the whole nation, I think, comes together. We've an opportunity to hear really for the first, absolutely from the first time as President, Catherine Connolly will address the gathering. About 350 people, I gather, have been invited. And I think we're going to hear, I understand, similar themes to those which she discussed during her presidency campaign: inclusivity, peace and diplomacy, reconciliation, the importance of the Irish language. Mm-hmm. She'll address the diaspora and issues around social justice. So I think we'll be listening out for all of that.
The oath is taken as Gaeilge, but the speeches tend to be as Berle. They tend to be in English.
Well, yes, historically, some were in Irish, some were more in English. And I understand that the president-elect, when she makes her speech, will speak in both Irish and English. As you know, we know she's made the endorsement of the Irish language a big part of
she
of
has.
Campaign.
And when she was making her victory speech in Dublin Castle on the day of the count, most of it was in Irish, and she kept the kind of minor
part. So
it'll
be in both. I understand it'll be both Irish and English.
You've also been making calls to find out how long she might be.
She'll have about 10 or 15 minutes, I gather, is what she's been allocated.
Really?
Yeah.
Allocated?
Yeah, well, that was... I'm sure it's all by consensus. Yeah. And Michael D went on his for nearly half an hour, I think, for his second inauguration
speech. He wasn't going to get to do it again.
So he probably just went for broke.
He didn't speak Irish for very long, which was kind of interesting for a man who's native Irish.
Well, I suppose there is a question about connecting with the Irish people at this moment. And most Irish people will struggle to understand a speech in Irish. I think we'd acknowledge that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And she's also talked about
600,000 in the census. Say she they could,
which speak. And you know, maybe sometimes people exaggerate their fluency, don't
that's,
they? We all maybe do a bit of that.
Possible, yeah.
So,
what I like about it, I find her a little bit easier to understand because she's learned Irish, I think, in her 50s later in life.
Yes,
and
was.
Sometimes she speaks nice and slowly.
Yeah.
She corrects her grammar sometimes when she's off. But she'll obviously be speaking from notes today, so that won't happen.
And in English, she's very deliberate. She's thoughtful. She pauses before she speaks.
She really does,
that. So she thinks about an answer to a question, and I think that sort of deliberate, thoughtful, reflective approach I would expect to see as well in her term as president.
You've given me more than I even knew about it up to date. You must miss this game, do you?
Nice to make a return for one morning only.
So you're very good at it. But this is obviously something you were superb at as a commentator. And when it was coming up, were you thinking, oh, I'd love to be part of the action again?
No, not really. I'm quite happy. I think I had three or four inaugurations that I covered over the years.
And
lots
a lot
of stories. So, I can't be greedy. But I always depended on a good guest. That was very important. Somebody you could turn to and you could throw a question and off they go. That's essential.
Someone who knows their stuff.
Who knows their stuff, exactly.
So you might be throwing to the issue of the chair, which I'm hearing more and more about. Do this chair, because you're talking about the echoes of British rule in Ireland in this building, Dublin Castle. There is a chair that they've used for every inauguration up until Michael D's too.
And I heard only this morning that it had been retired from Michael D, and it's now been brought back and it's been restored. It's the throne that a visiting monarch would sit on.
Yes, Queen Victoria herself.
And I think because Vior Queen Victoria wasn't terribly tall, they cut the legs down a bit. I seem to remember hearing that. So the number one army band now are performing in the hall. We're just looking at some pictures of them in the balcony, the gallery overlooking St. Patrick's Hall. And one of the president's first official function after she is inaugurated is to inspect a guard of honour, a military guard of honour, an army guard of honour, which will be drawn up in the upper yard. And that really is a very powerful symbol of the connections between the presidency and the military. Anyone who's visited Ars and looked at all has been fortunate enough to have had an invitation knows you'll be often greeted by a member of the Defence Forces.
Of course.
Defense Defence Forces staff work in the ORIS. The President is Commander-in-Chief of the Defence Forces.
I don't think that's said often enough, is it, that the President is the Commander?
The head of the Defence Forces. And that's very important because it shows and tells us in a very clear and unambiguous way that the Defence Forces are subject to civilian control. We elect the President, and the Defence Forces answer to the President.
There's no hereditary power here. You have to be elected.
Nothing like that. And I suppose it's interesting because the Constitution was drawn up in the 1930s when there was a rise in militarism, when there were military dictatorships beginning to emerge, and De Valera and the drafters of the Constitution perhaps were thinking in terms of ensuring that our military are answerable to those who govern us, those who we elect.
Right, they were thinking, at least, when they were drawing it up. The presidential, that was the throne during Queen Victoria's, and we think it's coming into use. That's kind of one of the mysteries of the day.
I heard one of my colleagues reported on RTE, so it must be.
Yeah, we can nerd out on that. As commentators today, you can make the odd little mistake in the pressure of the day. I learned the phrase "tabru orum" yesterday from Bernard Lock, and the pressure is on me. This did happen to you during
during Mary McAleese's first inauguration. I announced that President-elect McAleese had arrived with her husband Martin McGuinness. So I did correct it fairly quickly.
Your only error in how many years?
Oh no, there's plenty of those to stack up. But yeah, live broadcasting does have its hazards. I think it'll be interesting as well in the speech, and the speech, as I say, will follow her taking of the oath and her appointment as president. The extent to which it reflects our times, because looking back over some of the speeches, Mary Robinson talked about a pluralist Ireland, that whole change that was taking place in the 1990s, how Europe had opened up at the time in the fall of the Berlin Wall. And then Mary McAleese referred to the growth in our economy, our prosperity. She talked in her second inauguration about Ireland's rags to riches story.
Wow.
And then a few years later, of course, Michael D. Higgins in 2011, a very different Ireland, post-2004,
2011.
So he spoke about the pain that the economic collapse had caused. So I would expect the speech to reflect the times we're in as well. And then there are typically themes that occur, you know, repeatedly, the diaspora, relations with Northern Ireland. It would be very interesting to hear what she has to say about that connection, reaching out. Mary McAleese, you know, made a theme of her presidency, bridge building, particularly building bridges to people in Northern Ireland.
And Michelle O'Neill is there, the First Minister.
Up north. Mary Lou MacDonald.
Catherine Connolly has been kind of, it's said that she's a little bit weak on Northern Ireland. She hadn't mentioned much in the Dáil Éireann, so maybe that will become a centrepiece or mention as a theme in her speech.
Well, relations with Northern Ireland has been a central part of really every presidency, I think, since Mary Robinson, and the East-West relationship with the United Kingdom. Obviously, there was huge advances in that during the course of the presidencies over the last 20 or 30 years.
It is Armistice Day. Your grandfather fought in World War.
He did. My grandfather was spent a year out in on the Western Front in 1914, 1915. That's right.
And you have his medals.
I do. Yeah, he left them to me in his will, which is interesting. I was only a 2 or 3 year old child, and perhaps it was a way of leaving them with my father to really? They've been kept in good order. So I still have them.
You still have them. Would they be taken out on today, given the day that's in it?
No, I kind of keep them nice and safe, and they. I think you are actually allowed to wear relations medals, but I'm not sure I'd want to do that.
That might be a step too far. But we'll enjoy the inauguration ceremony, and our longer show is going to be cut short today because of these stately affairs of the nation of the day that's in it. The News at One is coming up with an early special because on Oak Tarron we'll be addressing the country for the first time as president from Dublin Castle in the next half hour or so. We're back again tomorrow. Normal service will resume for the fun and games. Thank you very much, Brian Dobson, and to everyone, have a lovely Tuesday. Until then, Slán.